This episode has been brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.
Welcome back to another episode of The Last Storm. My name is Mark, and I'm here with Dave. And tomorrow, or later on today, for you guys, we're going to be playing our first game of the season against the Jazz. Unless there's something like last season where we got the first game suspended. But I'm thinking we're going to have this game, and I'm excited about that. You know, it's going to be the first game of Derek Favors' revenge tour on the Jazz.
Yeah, this is a big deal for Derek Favors. I know that Oklahoma City people are going to support him, even though this will be in Utah. But I still feel like whenever we have a player that goes back and plays at his old home city, to me, this is a big step. And he's done this before with Derek Favors, but the reality is that he's never been in a position like he is now. This has been his best position after leaving Utah. That is why Utah traded him to us. I almost felt like they picked us to land Favors because they wanted to do something good for him. So, you know, and it's just nice to be able to have a player like Derek Favors' caliber. I feel like he's in the same category as Al Horford. Yes, Al Horford has more pedigree behind him, longer career, different things like that. But he is an Al Horford type player. If he can come in and step up and play in some big minutes, he could get a big contract in a couple of years that will help him out.
Yeah, it's all about being a professional and teaching the young players how to do that. And Al was a great example for us. And, you know, on the flip side of it, you can see like a player like Ben Simmons, who's had a little bit of trouble, you know, and today they just came out with some news that now the 76ers are going to suspend him for one game, the opener, because of some reaction he had to Doc Rivers in practice. I mean, this has been a mess the whole time, but now Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers are going to try to suspend a player into good behavior.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've seen this happen before in professional sports where coaches and players or GM and players will butt heads. But I've never seen coaches and GMs side on one side and a player on the other. This is really interesting. I felt like Doc Rivers played his hand pretty strong, giving a big fuck you to Ben Simmons when he suspended him or took him out of practice. I get it. But the reality is that how many times have we ever been part of a practice or part of training camp and there hasn't been a fight that breaks out or a pushing match or a yelling match or a screaming match? It's part of the game. It's part of what happens when you get all this testosterone in a gym playing against each other. This is what's absurd to me is the fact is that Ben Simmons is a passionate guy and they have been picking on him, trying to prove that he is petty, and I'm sick of it. Ben does not deserve this type of horrible treatment. And to me, this is why this should just end. And the NBA should step in and say something to Morey and Doc Rivers. Because the reality is that they're pushing Ben out. And they want to be able to pick where Ben goes. And Ben obviously has a say in that. And I'm just done with this. I'm done with what's happening. I'm done with them throwing Ben under the bus. And yes, Ben isn't acting like a mature adult over the situation, and I don't know what to say except for he's 24 years old. He's up against Doc Rivers, who's one of the most seasoned professionals in the NBA, and Daryl, who is obviously one of the most seasoned GMs in the league as well. So he's up against guys that have been doing this their entire lives, and now he's sitting here in a position at 24 years old, and of course he's not going to know what to do. These two guys have 50 years of combined NBA experience. Ben Simmons has five. You know, like there's no comparison, guys. So to me, I understand that people are going to be hating on Ben Simmons because you know, he's an athlete making millions of dollars. But the reality is that there's a proper way of doing that. There's a proper way of doing what's happening to Ben Simmons. And we saw with Oklahoma City. We've seen what happened with Oklahoma City. We've seen things can go completely wrong really, really quickly. But the reality is that you treat players with respect from the GM and coaches, and then the players will respect you in return. What's happening with Ben Simmons is the zero respect happening from the GM, and the coaches are putting on Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is pushing that back in their faces, and nobody fucking likes it. And that's what's happening. They're just being a little bunch of pansies right now, locked in a little room, trying to figure it out, and everybody's pointing the finger saying, let's just start finding him millions of dollars, and then he'll start obeying. That's not what's going to happen. You can fine them millions and millions of dollars, but we all know what happens when you have a child that's rearing up and acting up. They're not going to sit there and be like, oh, thanks for punishing me. Thanks for taking away my phone. Thanks for taking away my computer. Thanks for taking away my nice house. They're not going to say that. They're going to be like, fuck you. You can't take away my stuff without getting attitude in return. They're taking Ben Simmons' money, his hard-earned money, and they're taking it away from him, and they're acting like it's his fault. Listen, Philly, he wants out. Let him out.
I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a great way of saying it. I just feel like at this point, they've decided that Ben Simmons, they didn't like the way he asked to leave or whatever, didn't ask to leave, but maybe just they thought he was being petty. So they're going to return fire with fire, and they're going to come out and they're going to be even more petty. So they decided to suspend him for one game. One game isn't going to change the trajectory of things. But, you know, if you guys remember right around this point last year, right at the beginning of the season, I started talking quite a bit about the Sixers really being like the process being a failure. And a lot of people were like, how can you say that? Well, it was pretty obvious that there was a lot riding on that season. And if it didn't go good, then there is going to be a lot of finger pointing. And guess what? All the fingers turned and pointed at one person. It was Daryl Morey. I don't know if it was Elton Brand, but everybody else, Doc Rivers, Joel Embiid, they've all been vocal and pointing at Ben Simmons. And now Ben Simmons is like, fuck you guys. And guess what? Now Philly's window looks like it's going to close. And guess what happened? Nothing. Nothing. Nothing to show for all that process, all the Sam Hinkie bullshit and everything that went along with that. So, you know, yeah, it goes back to that whole, you know, losing just to grab picks or, you know, focusing on a rebuild and seeing what happens when you give the young players the support they need, but never taking an eye off the future. And that's what the Thunder do best. And so shortly, we're going to be playing the Jazz. And they're one of those teams that have, in a lot of ways, done it the right way. They've done it through the draft. They've done it through, you know, hanging on to their picks and doing it right. And, you know, there's a few other teams like the Jazz, like the Nuggets, and the Bucks. Those are the three teams that I look at and I say, wow, you know, we're in that same category. We're a smaller market. We have to figure out how to win without going out of our, you know, without stretching it, trying to get free agents and stuff like that. We have to draft wisely and see where that goes. But somehow we're in that spot, but we still have 20 more future picks coming up. It's unbelievable. And, you know, looking at it, we're going to have more picks even when we're at the point where we're contending. And that's really important. And you look around, like, what happens if the Bucks hadn't won? They'd be in trouble. They need to find ways to improve, and they gave up all that stuff for Jrue Holiday. So, you know, there's all sorts of different issues that can come about. But when you get to the point where you're contending, you better have some stocks in the reserves, because if you can't find ways to swing deals, then how are you going to do it? Through free agency? Not in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, man, and we're going to see the type of disrespect that I'm going to talk about here in a second, and I call it disrespect, but the reality is that the Utah Jazz is one of the best teams in the league, so the disrespect that I'm talking about is minor here. we have a 12.9% chance of winning tomorrow. That is it. They're giving the Utah Jazz an 87.1% chance of winning. That's from ESPN. We're going to see this a lot this year. This is going to be lopsided all year until we start winning games. When we start winning games, this is going to start flipping around. We saw this last year. When we won 20 games, I was watching this whole prediction, matchup prediction, and it started swaying our way very, very quickly. So obviously, they're going to start us slow because they think us being the worst team in the NBA, which is still mind-boggling because we have Shea, Dort, and all these other guys, Giddey, and they still think that we're going to be the worst team in the NFL, worst team in the NBA. And I'm okay with that because, you know, the reality is that they're the same guys that picked us coming in last year in the NBA, coming in last the year before with Chris Paul, and coming in last the year before that. And they've been wrong every single time. Yes, we came in the bottom three teams last year, bottom four teams last year, but we weren't the worst team in the NBA. And that's one thing that I want to kind of hang my head on, because the reality is that as this team is rebuilding and getting better, we're going to be looking at the winning ways as being an indication that these guys have always been able to win. We're watching what's happening in Philadelphia, and we've talked about it before on the show in prior episodes, is that you can't just flip a switch and start winning and say, hey guys, we're going to start winning. These guys we're okay, we're shitty, but we're going to start winning. We're going to trust the process, right? Until it's time to win. And That's what's happened, is that these guys now, they all need to reset. Embiid is going to end up needing to reset because he's not going to have what it takes to be able to win there. Ben Simmons is now going to reset. These guys are all needing to reset. And the reality is because you can't just force winning ways upon people. They've been in a losing mindset for years and years and years. And now they're just trying to force it upon it. You can't do that. Come on. This is insane. So as we're looking at the Oklahoma City play against the Utah Jazz tomorrow, I'm getting excited for a couple reasons. The first reasons is Utah Jazz is going to be a top three team in the West, if not a top three team in the NBA. I love Donovan Mitchell. I love the nucleus this team has really had. But the reason I like him so much is just what Mark said a little bit ago, is that this team has been drafted this way. You know, we watched them get rid of Deron Williams and get draft picks for him. We watched Gordon Haywood walk away. And so we've seen this team really transition into a drafting team. I love it, man. I love it when a team gets lucky like they have. Utah Jazz obviously didn't have an enormous amount of top-end picks. I believe Mitchell was a top six pick, if not sixth. I think he was someplace around there. So the reality is that this team is built very similar to us. Now, are we going to be able to echo exactly what they've done? No, because I think we have bigger plans than just being one of the best in the West. And that's where I think we separate ourselves, and that's why we have to hang our head on the fact that we have 20 plus more draft picks over the next 6 years. This is going to be intense for everybody involved, because as we get seeing things closer, we hear a lot of people say, yeah, Sam Presti could have 20 draft picks, but the quality of the draft picks is what matters. And we've seen this happen a lot in the NBA, is you don't know where the teams are going to end up. You could say Houston's one of the best teams in the league, and then all of a sudden they trade James Harden, and now they're one of the worst. And the draft picks that we have are very valuable from them. That's the type of thing that's going to be happening. We're going to see the Clippers go through a change as well. So really, to guide and say how much or how valuable our draft picks are worth over the next 6 years is really foolish, because there's no way of sitting down and trying to predict what teams are going to be like and how good they're going to be in the next couple of years. Because reality is that every fucking team in the NBA are seconds away from pushing reset on their team.
12.5%, huh? That sounds about as good a chance as me catching a steelhead tomorrow. But I'm going to give it a go, and I know the Thunder have a hell of a lot better chance than that. But real quick before we go on, you're talking about how we could have, you know, we could have been the worst team in the league last year. And say we were, and say we had the chance for the number one pick. Knowing what we know now about Josh Giddey, if it came down to Cade Cunningham or Josh Giddey, who would you pick?
Well, I would, honestly, I would pick Cade Cunningham and use that pick to trade back in the draft to pick up Josh Giddey and pick up three or four more draft picks in the process.
I mean, to me, the way that Giddey plays, that screams to me he has a chance to be an all-time great. And I understand everybody says Cade has all the tools, but look, watching somebody who has all the tools trying to figure out how to put it all together can take forever. And sure, maybe it won't take forever, but this guy's not coming into the league where Tracy McGrady was. And I mean, that's all I have to say about that. Like, we'll see what happens with him. But I'm telling you right now, if we did end up with a number one pick, I would want Josh Giddey. I don't care if we traded that pick back to get it. But if we use that pick for Josh Giddey, like if he went out and played like this with all the hype of being a number one pick, everybody would be cool with it. You know, they're kind of have this attitude of like, well, we'll see what happens. It's time. You know, he's going to be playing an NBA game later on today. Let's not hold back. Everybody just fall in love with this kid. Get excited and watch him go out there and ball, because he really does have that combination of a Larry Bird and Magic Johnson that I can't explain it, but the only other guy I've ever felt that way about was Luka Doncic. And now we have Josh Giddey, and I couldn't be happier. So I hope that you guys are pumped up as we are. And we're going to be back tomorrow after the game. So we're excited about that, and we hope you are too. So thanks again, and we'll see you tomorrow. And this episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.
Oh, and a correction, in 2017, in the 13th pick of the first round, Donovan Mitchell was drafted to the Denver Nuggets. So I was wrong on the top six pick. September.